All right. Hi, everybody. We're having very interesting weather here today. The forecast, I don't think the forecast will happen exactly as they predicted, but the forecast was for 90 degrees today in Pueblo and an hour north of here in Colorado Springs, a blizzard. Isn't that amazing? And yeah, a while ago, I had to go out to the mailbox to mail something, and there was a dust storm going on at the time, just a massive, massive dust storm. So I'm supposed to go to La Vida today. Is the weather okay there, Cheryl? I'm wondering if the drive is something I should do. Is it? What's it like there?
Very windy. In fact, the front door keeps opening up on its own, and it's making such a loud noise that I kept going, what is that noise? And I just now closed it again for this third time today.
Okay, we'll see how it is later. I think that I was planning to start driving around 3:30, so we'll look and see what it's like then, and then I'll let you guys know whether I'm coming or not. You know, I need
there is a forecast of some snow, but I think the accumulation over the next 48 hours is like 1 to 3 inches.
Yeah, okay.
But it's very, very windy.
Okay, so we'll see. We'll see. I'm playing it by ear then. So let me play us a song. I have picked out a song by Stephen Walters. I don't know if I've heard this song before, but I was attracted to the word mystery. So the song is called Love is a Mystery. Just like whether I'm going to La Vida today or not is a mystery.
To rock a little bit. You know, love is a mystery that'll never be explained. But you know, I got this deep, deep feeling. Well, this one truth will never change. If you really want to know what love is, you know, you got to feel the pain. If you want to grow a garden out on a dry and dusty plain, you're gonna need to plant the seed. You're gonna need the sunshine. You're gonna need the rain. And when you're talking about love, you know they're one and the same. Do it, Steve. Dinner now, one you just love to eat. It's always a combination between the bitter and the sweet. It'd be no good one without the other. Let me tell you, sister, let me tell you, brother, love's a mystery that'll never be explained. But you know, I got this deep, deep feeling. Well, this one truth will never change. If you really want to know what love is, you know you've got to feel the pain. And if your love is gone and left you, and at night you're calling out their name, you know you've got to feel just what you're feeling. Then maybe things are gonna change. You know the blues are here to help us, is the truth now. To feel the pain, that's why I love them. Yeah. Got to feel the pain. You know you got to feel the pain. Oh, if you want to know what love is, You know you got to feel the pain. Oh yes, oh yes you do. Thank you.
All right, I think Ann talked a little bit about that, right? You got to feel the pain. So so that would fit, at least her teaching. I don't know what mine is yet. So today we're on chapter 15. And I'll begin with the Derek Lynn version. The Tao Masters of Antiquity. And that first line of chapter 15 always cracks me up because Lao Tzu is one of the oldest masters that we're aware of. You know, Lao Tzu, they estimate at 5,000 years ago. You know, Buddha 2,500, Jesus 2,000. So, you know, Lao Tzu's pretty antique to us. And he's talking about the Tao Masters of Antiquity, right? So, you know, you got to wonder, who are these guys? You know, these are people that we've never heard of. It's pretty amazing. He says, the Tao Masters of Antiquity, subtle wonders through mystery, depths that cannot be discerned because one cannot discern them. Therefore, one is forced to describe the appearance. Hesitant, like crossing a wintry river. Cautious, like fearing four neighbors. Solemn, like a guest. Loose, like ice about to melt. Genuine, like plain wood. Open, like a valley. Opaque, like muddy water. Who can be muddled yet desist? In stillness, gradually become clear. Who can be serene yet persist? In motion, gradually come alive. One who holds this Tao does not wish to be overfilled because one is not overfilled. Therefore, one can preserve and not create anew. One of the things that really interested me here was the cautious, like fearing four neighbors. It made me just wonder if that's like an ancient Chinese tale or something. It's kind of funny. I'm going to look and see what Dr. Wayne Dyer says for the 15th verse. The ancient masters were profound and subtle. Their wisdom was unfathomable. There is no way to describe it. One can only describe them vaguely by their appearance. Watchful, like men crossing a winter stream. Alert, like men aware of danger. Simple as uncarved wood. Hollow, like caves. Yielding, like ice about to melt. Amorphous, like muddy water. But the muddiest water clears as it is stilled. And out of that stillness, life arises. He who keeps the Tao does not want to be full, but precisely because he is never full, he can remain like a hidden sprout and does not rush to early ripening. I like that. So far, I like that one the most. I feel like I might work with that. But let's look and see what Stephen Mitchell says. The ancient masters were profound and subtle. Their wisdom was unfathomable. There is no way to describe it. All we can describe is their appearance. They were careful, as someone crossing an iced over stream. alert as a warrior in enemy territory, courteous as a guest, fluid as melting ice, shapeable as a block of wood, receptive as a valley, clear as a glass of water. Do you have the patience to wait till your med settles, till your mud settles, and the water is clear? Can you remain unmoving till the right action arises by itself? The master doesn't seek fulfillment. Not seeking, not expecting, she is present and can welcome all things. So I like that one too. But let's go ahead and start with Dr. Wayne Dyer. So what all three of these say is that they're describing the ancient masters. In fact, they all three say that there's no way to describe the wisdom that the ancient masters live by. And the only way to describe that wisdom is by their appearance. But I think I feel like saying, you know, we're not really concerned about the ancient masters. You know, one thing that can come about on the spiritual path is trying to copy something. You know, we see someone else that we think is spiritual or realized, and we try to copy them. And I don't think that that's what this verse is about. It's not about let's look at them so we can copy them. I think, to me, this verse is more about recognizing that energy when it comes through us. We want to learn to recognize the difference between what's being called the Tao and the ego, so that we can align ourselves with the Tao. And so we want to become familiar with those characteristics of the Tao, because the ego cannot imitate them, right? The ego is always different. So I think that's the way I'm going to go about looking at this, is I'm going to, you know, play a game of contrast. And if you guys want to join me in that game of contrast, we can. We'll look at these descriptions of the masters when the Tao was coming through them. We'll gain an understanding of that. And then we might go ahead and just look at the ego and see how the ego is different, right? So that we can really get a feel within ourselves of when we're being moved by the Tao and when we're being moved by the ego. So feel free to play along. I'll try to watch the board. I'm not very good at that when I'm teaching, but I'll do my best. But also you guys can you know, unmute yourselves and just join in. So I'll read the first paragraph again, but it's really just the setup. The work occurs more in the lower paragraphs. The first paragraph says, the ancient masters were profound and subtle. Their wisdom was unfathomable. There is no way to describe it. One can only describe them vaguely by their appearance. So the first thing that we have is watchful, like men crossing a winter stream. Stephen Mitchell used the word careful, and Derek Lynn used the word hesitant. Probably the one thing I don't care about in the word hesitant is I think the word hesitant could, for some people, imply fear, right? When I would say that if it's a master, if there's a hesitancy there, it's more of a taking time to check, right? Like before I act, let me make sure this is the Tao I'm paying attention to. Let me be a little hesitant here. Let me hold myself back a little bit. And that kind of fits more with the word that Stephen Mitchell picked, which was careful, right? Careful. And then again, here we have watchful. And again, like men crossing a winter stream, or as Stephen Mitchell put in, he was very clear that it's an iced over stream. So, you know, when a stream ices over, of course, a stream is moving water as opposed to still water. So it's more likely that the ice might not be thick enough and the ice might break. And so if you were crossing an iced over stream, which I probably even wouldn't do, nor would I recommend anybody else do it, but if you were, you might pay careful attention to where you place your feet, right? And again, we have the words watchful, the words careful, the words hesitant. And so if you just imagine for a moment this image of crossing an iced over stream, and you're just being very careful about where you place your feet to make sure that you make it across the stream without crashing through the ice, right? And then imagine doing that with everything in life. You know, like before you speak, you check, just like you're placing your feet on an ice over stream. You know, is this something I am to say? Right? Before you act, you check, just like you're, you know, placing your feet on an ice over stream. Is this something I am to do? Right? Can you guys feel that image that they've drawn for us? It's like a picture they've drawn for us. I think one thing that's interesting about it is we often talk about being in the flow, and I'm not going to say, I mean, being in the flow is a legitimate thing. But I think that the ego likes to pretend like it's in the flow too. You know, it's just acting automatically and being in the flow is not the same thing. And I think that's probably the discernment that we want to get off this particular image about being watchful, like men crossing a winter stream. You know, in that automatic action, there may not be checking happening before we place the feet to make sure that we are in alignment with the Tao. So I suppose, at least for me, the lesson here is making sure that whatever is moving me is the Tao or the highest energies or the highest vibrations. And that, it to me, is not a thinking thing. That's a feeling thing. Right? One thing I love about the ego is that the ego can't go anywhere without baggage. So if you're really looking, you can feel that baggage. You know, the ego has an ulterior motive in everything that it does. And what we're calling the Tao here, it travels without any baggage at all. Right? And so if you just feel for the feel of baggage or no baggage, you know, you can kind of feel whether you're following the Tao or whether you're following, I'm going to call it the autopilot of the ego. One thing that to me has always been really interesting about, of course, I've tended in my lifetime to call it following guidance rather than following the Tao, but it doesn't really matter what we call it. It's the same thing. But one thing that's interesting about following guidance is guidance has never, ever told me why. Or what's going to happen next. And so if I have stories about why I'm doing this or what's happening next, that's coming from ego. With guidance, there's just the feeling to do it. Yeah, go ahead, Cheryl.
I'm so glad you said that because that was going to be my question. So it's really interesting how this is all working for me lately. It's like, I mean, that immediately came to me as, so is this, you know, and you just answered it. So I want to thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. You actually answered my question.
Thank you.
So I'm going to write that down. So I'd love for you to repeat that because I want to write that down.
Okay, I'll repeat it. So what I said was, in my experience, guidance never tells me why or what's next. In fact, Jesus, remember last week I played that song from Jesus Christ Superstar, Gethsemane, and Jesus was mad at God and he's yelling at God. And he says something like, you're really good at what, but you're not so good at why, or something like that. You know, and that's a true statement. That's a true statement, you know, that the why is not included. Jacqueline.
Yeah, I certainly don't disagree with that statement. That certainly my experience as well. Guidance doesn't give the why. But I will tell you that what I have noticed is ego, thinking mind will come in later and say, oh, that's why.
Yes.
So it wants to define it after the fact. It wants to have a story around it after the fact.
Right. It wants to understand. The ego doesn't feel in control unless it understands. So it wants to understand. And so even if it has to make up something, but we can say the why is still coming from ego. It doesn't cross out the guidance, right? It doesn't nullify the guidance, but the why is from the ego every time, you know. I was kind of laughing at Muji last week. I was listening to one of his meditations and during the meditation, he says, you know, there's no next. No, what's next, you know, just now, just here, and which I was totally okay with, but it was really funny to me, and this is just a joke, but at the end of the meditation, he goes, okay, so what's going to happen next is, but what he was doing was preparing people to be drawn back out of the meditation, but I just thought that was kind of funny. Okay, so what's going to happen next is, but, you know, that's really the way, you know, like I have received 99.9% of my guidance is only about now, you know, but I have received guidance. I'm going to say that involves the future. For example, when I received the guidance to move to Pueblo, when I received the guidance to open a retreat house, those things were things that were going to unfold over time. So they involve the future, but there was still no story. You know, like I remember when people were asking me, why are you going to move to Pueblo? What are you going to do when you get there? I didn't know, right? All I know is move to Pueblo. You know, so even when it seems like the future is involved in the guidance, it's still very, very minimal. It doesn't come with like a 5-year plan, a step-by-step, here's how you're going to accomplish it. All of that still kind of, you discover that as you start moving in that direction. But most guidance is very in the moment and has nothing at all to do with the future. And so again, watchful, like men crossing a winter stream. This just means that what we really want to do is we want to do this inner checking. And it would be wonderful if we could get in the habit of inner checking all the time, right? You know, before we speak, before we act, inner checking, you know, what is moving me? Because again, the ego can also move you from one thing to another thing to another thing. And but you're being on auto ego rather than auto Tao. It can move you from one guilt activity to another guilt activity, right? You're doing it to make yourself look better. And you're going from one to the other to the other, but it has that baggage underneath, right? So anything else anybody wants to say about like watching like men crossing a winter stream? All right, the next thing I think is very similar. Let's see if we see anything different in it. The next thing is alert, like men aware of danger. And Derek Lynn said, cautious, like fearing for neighbors. Which, like I said, I wonder if that's an ancient Chinese tale because it's so specific. Stephen Mitchell says, alert, as a warrior in enemy territory. And I'll tell you what that's saying to me. It's the same as the previous, except a little more emphasis on awareness that I can fall back into ego at any moment. Right? So with the first one, I'm crossing the winter stream. I'm being cautious. But what happens is I don't want to become too confident in my ability to cross that winter stream. Because the moment I start becoming too confident and I'm not as cautious, that's when I fall back into ego. So watchful like men crossing a winter stream and alert like men aware of danger. Let me get out my 7 steps to awakening. Okay, so listen to this. This is from Sri Annamalai Swami. It's number 921 in the 7 Steps to Awakening. You have to make an enormous effort to realize the self. It is very easy to stop on the way and fall back into ignorance. At any moment, you can fall back. You have to make a strong, determined effort to remain on the peak when you first reach it. But eventually a time will come when you are fully established in the self. When that happens, you cannot fall. But that's what I think the Tao is saying too. You know, you can become too confident, you know, like you've been very careful, you know, stepping along with the Tao, paying attention. And then at some point you become confident in that. Prematurely, I'll call it, and therefore you cease to pay so much attention and you slip right back into ego auto without knowing it. And so in addition to saying, watchful like men crossing a winter stream, he adds alert like men aware of danger, that danger of falling back at any moment. I used to say that the default in this world is ego. Do you guys know what the word default means? You know, I learned the word default when I was a software trainer. Back then, this is no longer true, but back then when you started Microsoft Word, the font was Times New Roman and the size was 10. That was the default. And if you opened up Microsoft Word and just started typing, you had Times New Roman 10. And if you wanted a different font or a different size, you had to change it. If you didn't take the action to change it, you were going to be in Times New Roman 10. Where the ego is the default in the world. In other words, if you aren't being active, you know, making a choice about how to be, it's going to be ego. That's the default in the world. That's the Times New Romans 10, right? And so it sounds like the masters were aware of that. So not only are they cautious, but they're very, very aware of the ability to fall back if they aren't aware in every moment. Jay.
So are you saying that the default is what occurs from the habitual conditioning then, right?
Yeah, we could say that, the habitual conditioning.
Okay, so that when you let go of that conditioning and you living in the moment as being lived through, it's spontaneous and there is no preset to fall. Is that like a correct?
Yeah. Way? Except what I think I'm reading, and whenever Jacqueline knows this, whenever I say, I think, you know, I'm giving you an interpretation or an idea, not a certainty. Okay. But what I think that they are saying is, until the world disappears for you, you can fall back at any time. Do not become overconfident. Like, it's that strict.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So that's what happens is people start thinking, okay, now I'm being lived through. I can just relax now. And as soon as they relax now, they fall back into ego.
Got it. Wow. Okay. Thanks.
So that's why it's, again, alert like men aware of danger. Or again, the way Stephen Mitchell worded it, alert as a warrior in enemy territory. I mean, think about, and we want to take the fear out of the statement, right? Because it's like, you know, in enemy territory, you may be in fear. We want to take the fear out of it. But imagine if you somehow were in enemy territory alone, how alert you would be, right? That's very alert. You know, every sound you'd be paying attention to see what that is. Is that just a bird in the bushes or is that an enemy, right? very paying attention. So I think they're talking about really paying attention all the time to make sure that you're still walking with the Tao rather than slipping back into the ego. Again, without the fear, just the alertness. So watchful like men crossing a stream. Alert like men aware of danger. Now the next one that we have is simple as uncarved wood. So now we're changing themes a little bit. Another characteristic, simple as uncarved wood. And Stephen Mitchell said, he used the word shapeable as a block of wood. Let's see what Derek Lynn said. He said genuine, like plain wood. So they all use different words here. What they have in common is the uncarved wood. And of course, I think the old Chinese does have, like certain characters that are pictures. But I think there's a lot in between that's missing that's in current day sentence structure. And so I think people have to interpret the Chinese, the ancient Chinese, and add to it. So the interpretation here of simple, moldable, and genuine, that's probably the interpretation. What they have in common is the uncarved natural wood. So what if we just focus on that for a moment? Uncarved natural wood. You know, when I contemplate uncarved natural wood, the first thing that happened to me is what was next to it was a beautifully carved piece of wood. You know, I gave it to the retreat house, this beautiful piece of olive wood that was carved, and it's carved into a picture of Jesus and Peter and somebody else in the boat pulling in the net with all the fish in it, you know, when Peter thought there were no fish, right? So it's very, very carefully carved. So I had that image of that piece right next to a piece that isn't carved. And the next thing that happened in my mind naturally was, what's the difference? And the difference is the one that is carved has been manipulated, right? Ideas have been put on it. And those ideas are now carved into it. Kind of made me think of conditioning, you know, which Jay brought up a minute ago. Right, we were all born as uncarved wood. The other day, Billy was teaching in the sanctuary, and he made a comment that he was raised in an African-American neighborhood. And of course, he's a white guy, but he was raised in an African-American neighborhood, and he indicated that the African-American culture is really his culture. That's what he identifies with. And he was very excited about, I think it was Marvin Gaye is on a stamp. I think it was Marvin Gaye, right? You know, I have contemplated that a number of times. You know, there's so many people in this world that are racist. But it's so interesting because if you take any child of any skin color and you put them in the culture of another race or skin color, they will grow up in that culture. Right? Because that's how they're being conditioned. Like Jasmine is Chinese. I raised her. She's raised by a white woman in a white culture. You know, she's still Chinese, but culturally, she's a white girl. Right? And the Chinese know that. They call her a banana. Yellow on the outside, white on the inside. You know? Culturally, she's a white girl, right? Because every single baby, regardless of the skin color or anything else, is born as an unshaped block of wood. And then they're shaped primarily by the environment and the family around them. But they're all born exactly the same. Nobody's really born black or white or Chinese. Those are more cultural statements than skin color statements. That's why a white guy can be raised in an African-American neighborhood and identify more with the black culture. Right? Because that doesn't really have anything to do with skin color. That's the conditioning. So What I see when I just think of uncarved wood is I think of that natural, unconditioned state. Again, the words they used were simple, genuine, and shapeable, which I suppose it is still shapeable if it has not yet been conditioned. But of course, the real purpose of the uncarved wood is to remain in that genuine, natural, unconditioned state. And of course, the ego is definitely not that. The ego identifies with the sum total of your conditioning. You know, whether you identify as a white person or a white person raised in a black neighborhood or a Chinese person raised by a white woman. I mean, you know, all of that, that's actually getting into ego then. You've now stepped away from natural, unconditioned into here's who I am. And that here's who I am comes from the conditioning. And of course, the conditioning goes much, much deeper than that. We'd be really lucky if that's as far as the conditioning went. You know, here's my skin color and here's my racial identification. That would be nice. But it goes so much further than that, right? And again, that's why we can get on auto ego pilot, because we can just be purely driven by our conditioning. So the real trick here for us is to become aware of our conditioning. And, you know, there are all kinds of opportunities to do that. I remember for me, where I started really becoming aware of my conditioning was when I started having guests in my house, which happened for about 4 years. And especially around the kitchen, we're all so conditioned about the kitchen. You know, I don't know why it is, or at least us ladies are. Maybe some of the men aren't. But we're so conditioned about, you know, how to do the dishes, how to put the dishes away, how to prepare the food, what food to buy. You know, I mean, there was somebody that came to my house not too long ago and commented on the fact that I keep the bread in the refrigerator and that that's not good for bread. You know, but that's, you know, so these are conditionings. You see? And so the way that I really started becoming aware of my conditioning was having people in my house, because you don't notice your own conditioning usually when you're alone. It's just what's natural to you. You're on auto ego pilot, right? But when somebody else shows up in your environment, or you're in their environment, but somebody else shows up that's conditioned differently, and they point out that this is supposed to be done in a different way, and your conditioning bumps up against their conditioning, that's when you can notice this is just conditioning. The mistake would be to think I'm right. I'm right, she's wrong, right? Because that's just believing your conditioning. That's staying on ego autopilot. Noticing, oh, this must just be conditioning because she learned it that way and I learned it this way. Neither one of us are an uncarved block of wood right now. This is where we were both carved. And then choosing to let go of your way. Let the other person do it their way. That's how you then start removing your conditioning. And in the retreat house, again, we have a guideline that if somebody else is doing a job, let them do it their way. And that's why. I mean, this explains exactly why. It's to help us let go of our ego. If we're in there controlling how they do it, it's because of that carved block of wood, and we're maintaining that carved block of wood that is my conditioning. Now, we do have an exception. And the exception is if the person's about to do something dangerous. You know, like, for example, if they were hanging a picture and they were about to stand on a chair with wheels, you know, they'd be like, no, 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 you know, we don't allow that. So, you know, the way I word that is you know, when it's really important. You know, you gotta have that discernment. When is this really important to know it needs to be done this way? But that's going to actually be minimal. The vast majority of the time when you want somebody to do something your way, it's because you're believing your conditioning. You're not in the flow of the Tao. You're in the flow of your ego conditioning. So watchful like men crossing a winter stream. Alert like men aware of danger. Simple as uncarved wood, or I'm going to change that to as unconditioned as uncarved wood, right? Now, I think, you know, Derek Lynn had a few more here that gets skipped a little bit by Wayne Dyer. So let's look at something that Derek has, and I think even Stephen Mitchell had it. Derek has solemn like a guest, and Stephen Mitchell has courteous like a guest. I'm just going to look up solemn for a second to see what definitions we have of that, because I think of that as kind of like a sadness, but there must be other definitions. Dignified. Yeah, dignified. So, dignified. I'm actually going to go ahead and look up dignified because I have ideas around that too. Sometimes I look up words because I have ideas around them and I'm not sure my ideas around them. Okay, so dignified is having or showing a composed or serious manner that is worthy of respect. All right, having or showing a composed or serious manner that is worthy of respect. And that takes us back to Stephen Mitchell, where he says courteous. So first of all, not everybody's this way. I know that because I've had lots of guests in my house. Not everybody knows how to be a guest. Some people do, some people don't. But a courteous guest tries to leave a small footprint, right? A courteous guest is neat, you know, hangs her towel instead of throwing it on the floor, makes her bed, keeps her stuff, you know, near or in her suitcase or in the drawers that are provided, right? Is paying attention to kind of the family dynamics in the house that she's in and is trying to fit into them rather than clash against them, right? It's kind of the attitude of when in Rome, you know, do as the Romans do. It's an attempt to fit in, but it's not an attempt to fit in from unworthiness. It's an attempt to fit in from respect for your host, right? So, he didn't say it. They did. So let's look over here. So we have solemn like a guest, which we saw is dignified, and courteous as a guest. The word guest, the guest implies being aware that I don't really belong here. This isn't my home. This isn't my place. Right, I don't own this. I don't possess this. So if you're living life courteous as a guest or dignified like a guest, there's an attitude that this belongs to someone else. So the question becomes, who does this belong to? And I would say it belongs to the Tao. You know, we could call it consciousness. This belongs to consciousness. So the question then becomes, how does consciousness want me to be with its world, you know, with its retreat house, with its sanctuary, with its, you know, organization? I think that one word that we often use that kind of fits with this is I am just a steward, right? I think that is the same attitude. I am just a steward. If you're really going all the way with this, you know, people often say, my children. No, it's consciousness, or consciousness's children. How does consciousness want me to be with its children? Not my husband, but consciousness. You know, consciousness created this character of this husband. Consciousness created this character of this wife, of this mother. You know, none of it is mine and none of it is me. Right? And so again, that's going back to always having to be in tune. But it adds that element of I'm not the owner. I'm just the guest. Kind of sweet if you think about it. And of course, the ego possesses everything. It's my house, it's my children, it's my husband, it's my idea. In fact, sometimes, you know, if you pay close attention to me, you know, ideas will come through and people will say things like, oh, Regina, that was a great idea. And what I often say is, well, the idea just appeared. You know, you'll hear me say, the idea just appeared. There's not an ownership of the idea. I saw this idea, it felt right, I shared the idea. But there's no possession of the idea. I'm just a guest. Another way that people will use that sometimes is I'm just a vessel. Right? I think these are all the same attitudes. So imagine living as if you're always just the guest or just the vessel or just the steward. None of it belongs to you. None of it is really your business. You're just being courteous to the master of the house, which is consciousness. Let's see if there's another one that Wayne skips. I don't think Wayne did the ice, did he? Yeah, he did. Okay, he did the ice. He added one that they don't have, which is interesting. The other two don't have it. Well, sort of. He added a hollow like caves. What Derek Lynn has is open like a valley. And then Stephen Mitchell has receptive as a valley. So for some reason, we have hollow like caves with Wayne Dyer. Open like a valley and receptive like a valley. So hollow, open, receptive. It makes me think of the empty shell in NTI 1 Corinthians. It's what they all seem to have in common. And now we're actually starting to get kind of repetitive. What we're seeing as we're looking at these different images is they're kind of all saying the same thing in different ways, right? We're back to that unconditioned again. Yeah, being here in Colorado, you know, we have tumbleweeds out here, at least in Pueblo. And the tumbleweeds during the summer, you know, they're actually little weed bushes that have roots. They're green and they're in the ground. And then in the fall, the roots die and the bushes dry out, and then they become tumbleweeds that are moved by the wind. And it's interesting because in the spring and the summer, the wind can blow and blow and blow, and they're just like any other bush. They don't go anywhere. You know, you could liken their roots to conditioning, right? The wind can't blow them. But in the fall, when their roots die and they dry out, then they're unconditioned, and the wind can blow them wherever. So I always say that we need to be like the tumbleweeds in the fall. Right, the fall and the winter tumbleweeds, to not have roots, not have our own ideas of how this is supposed to be. As soon as we have our own ideas of how this is supposed to be, we have roots and we can't be moved because we're going to be married to our own ideas. We need to have no roots so that the wind here representing the Tao or the consciousness, the Holy Spirit, can blow us wherever it wants to go. for me, this is really interesting right now because, as you guys know, I was guided to move to Pueblo, guided to start Awakening Together, guided to start the retreat house. And then a couple of years ago, as some of you know, I was guided to prepare for my death. I don't know what that means, to prepare for the end. And I don't know what that means. And there are a number of possibilities. You know, there could be a physical death. There could be a spiritual awakening. There could be a retirement. You know, who knows what this means. But I, you know, some of you were standing there when I received the guidance to prepare for the end. So you remember that. It happened at a fall retreat a couple of years ago. So what's interesting now is a couple of things have changed for me. One, I don't even know how to put this into words, but the future beyond just the very, very immediate future, the future has a blackness to it, which probably used to be filled with imagination about what the future would be. But now if this was a movie or a script, it's like that part of the script hasn't been written yet. That's what I mean by a blackness to it. You know, like the future is this big unknown. And I watch the mind as it tries to come up with preferences. I watch the mind say, this is what I want the future to be. This is what I want the future to be. This is what I want the future to be. Now, first of all, you know, it has different ideas. It doesn't have one idea. But secondly, I see it as a very great challenge for me right now to stay with the knowledge that there's a change coming, a change that could be called the end, and to wait and let that unfold. To not put roots in that says, this is what I want it to be. So it's kind of interesting because I was guided to prepare for the end, and so I am. You know, I mean, I'm preparing, and the people who work closest with me know that I'm doing that. But at the same time, I don't know when the end is, what the end is, or what if there's anything that occurs after the end. And I have to remain without preference. I have to remain the tumbleweed so that whenever the end of this movie comes, if you know, assuming there's still a physical body here, it can be blown in whatever direction it is blown, even if it's blown to pick up from Colorado and go somewhere else and leave and have nothing to do with Awakening Together ever again. I think Cheryl might have a little root there because she kind of jumped like I stabbed her when I said that. But wouldn't that be a root? Right? Wouldn't that be a root? And I got to tell you, at the end of the movie that that's in my mind, when the end came, the person left and had nothing to do with it again. So, and I don't know that that's going to happen, but I have to be willing for that. So, being open like a valley or hollow like a cave, or what was it this one said? Receptive as a valley, means being as unrooted as a fall or winter tumbleweed. And that has to be complete. That can't be partial. If you're partially rooted, the wind's still not going to be able to blow you. We only have 2 minutes here, so I think that probably what we'll do is go ahead and come back to number 15 next week. I will be here next week. We'll come back to number 15 next week, and we'll look at this a little more. Let me go ahead and just read it. I guess I got Stephen Mitchell in my hand, so I'll read the Stephen Mitchell version again. The ancient masters were profound and subtle. Their wisdom was unfathomable. There is no way to describe it. All we can describe is their appearance. They were careful as someone crossing an iced over stream. Alert as a warrior in enemy territory. Courteous as a guest. Fluid as melting ice. Shapeable as a block of wood. Receptive as a valley. Clear as a glass of water. Do you have the patience to wait till your mud settles and the water is clear? Can you remain unmoving till the right action arises by itself? The master doesn't seek fulfillment. Not seeking, not expecting, she is present and can welcome all things. So next week we will come back and we'll continue to look at the 15th verse. And I'll type a title in the chat room for you, Don, okay? In just about 30 seconds.